Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to the moon. I am your host for this evening, Lawrence Ray, and today I'm joined by my esteemed co-host, Ricardo Martinez. And today, both myself and Ricardo are interviewing Nicholas Gregory, a man with many talents, as you can see from his Twitter bio, and the man behind Commerce Block. So how are you doing today, Nicholas?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me.
Nice. Well, we're super, super happy to have you here. And today, I guess I wanted to start off with a question just to get an idea of, you know, the man behind us all. I saw, because I was listening, I think it was last week, to a podcast of yours that's fairly recent with Stefan Rivera. And you were talking at the beginning about like your work as a software engineer. But I also saw, because I was looking, you know, at different websites and Twitter and things, and I saw that you were a martial arts coach and diver as well, which sounds pretty exciting. But I was thinking to myself, like, hey, how is that? Because obviously, software engineer, martial arts guy, and diver, like three pretty different spheres. So I was wondering, I don't know, if you could like give me a bit of understanding of the story of like how those worlds blended together and kind of how you ended up doing all those different things. It just sounded like an interesting story to me.
Well, if you watch The Matrix, which I'm sure you've heard of, there's quite a few parallels between being a software engineer and a martial artist. So, but yeah, I was just a hobbyist. You know, when I was young, I used to travel a bit. I used to work a bit, backpack. I got into martial arts really just because it was a way of training with other people and staying fit. I was never into just going to a gym and lifting something. And it was really a different avenue of meeting people. And it just so happened I did it for quite a while, and then I moved to New York through work in 2010, and you know, I just ended up teaching there because the type I was doing wasn't well known in the US, and it was really just a hobby, and it was a great way to meet people in the US outside of like, you know, the kind of software engineering work sphere, and that's it really, to be honest. But I guess I did a reality TV show once, or I think some YouTube thing in New York, and it kind of blew up. There was this Irish boxer who went around the US challenging, I guess, Kung Fu people. And I didn't take it seriously at the time. I said, yeah, let's meet. And before I knew it, I was on the YouTube show and he became a good friend. And yeah, I guess through that, I started teaching quite a lot. But it's just a bit of fun. I mean, I don't teach anything anymore. I mean, I do for fun. I do Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. But you know, that's just as a hobbyist. You know, keeps me sane, keeps me in shape. And that's it, really. Sorry, nothing more special than that.
Well, no, I'd say, I don't know, it sounds kind of interesting and like unexciting to a degree. So like, obviously, because is it BJJ that you were into at the time? And then when you went
to... No, not at the time, I am now. So, you know,
right.
MMA is big now, but then it was kind of transitioning. And then
yeah,
just through people I knew, I started going to MMA schools. And I really fall for BJJ. I like it. And I'm getting a bit older. So at a certain point in life, you can't get punched in the head anymore, you know, especially if you're a software engineer, you need to think. Jiu-jitsu, I'm not saying jiu-jitsu is not tough, it is obviously, but you can train at a high level without, you know, getting concussion. You can always tap. So if someone's trying to choke you, if someone's trying to pull your arm out of your shoulder, you can always tap. So it's a great way to train, I think, as you get older without risking concussion and injuries, because you can tap. I mean, I still get injured in jiu-jitsu, but you know, it's normally because I haven't tapped quick enough or I haven't warmed up. I don't have to worry about, you know, teeth. Well, you can have your teeth knocked out, but I don't have to worry about blows to the head and things like that. But yeah, that's probably why I describe jiu-jitsu for me.
I get that. It's I understand what you're saying, because I think from like my understanding, I've got friends who do jiu-jitsu and other martial arts, and they were saying like it's like if you're a smaller person, you can use like different vantage points and grapples and things to like avoid getting into rough situations. And yeah, they were saying you avoid a lot more unnecessary combat, I guess is the way they put it. So,
well, there's no strikes in jiu-jitsu. So, and if you look at the original UFC days, it was weird. You had these kind of boxers, kickboxers fighting these little jiu-jitsu guys who essentially just drag these guys to the ground and using leverage would pop their shoulder or, you know, try and choke them from the behind. And you know, it is very engineering like. So you know if you Google jiu-jitsu, you will see a lot of big, you know, strong guys wrestling. Very scientific, it's very engineering, it's all about leverage. A lot of Bitcoiners are in it, funny enough. The place I used to train, New York, Roger Ver used to have private lessons there, and it was funny because he used to pay private lessons in Bitcoin, And I never met him, but one day I was in the showers, as you do, with one of the coaches, and he was complaining about some Bitcoin guy who screwed him, or more or less, by paying for class in Bitcoin. And he didn't realize that this was probably 2015. He didn't realize how much that money actually was. So he knew I was working in tech. He knew I knew about Bitcoin. So he literally went on his blockchain.com account. And I think his password was probably something like password or 123. And it turns out Roger Ver paid almost $30,000 for a lesson. And the money was there. And suddenly this Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt was like, wow, couldn't believe it. So, you know, I think he was angry for a few years and ultimately was very happy. And this was in 2015. So I guess that's probably $400,000 now. So.
Damn, that's amazing. Actually, that's kind of a cool story. Like, if the jiu-jitsu guy had like diamond hands, you know, he'd be sat there with, you know, potentially half a million or something. Whatever.
He still has half of it. He blew half of it on a surfing holiday, and I still speak to him about that. So.
That's really cool. That's I didn't really realize the connection. I guess as you say, for Roger Burns. I suppose basically what you're saying is you're basically Neo, really. I mean, you made it at the beginning of the podcast.
Yeah, when I close my eyes and sleep, maybe. Yeah.
No, I like it. It's I'll move on slightly because I know I'm aware that, you know, our audience isn't fighting in martial arts based, but I think it's really interesting just to understand that. And I guess that's a pretty cool story as well. I've heard a lot of stories about people who didn't fully understand Bitcoin or whatever being paid in it years ago or tipped in it or whatever, and then they just, you know, find out, oh, it's worth, you know, X amount, and they've made, you know, hundreds of thousands or tens of thousands. I love those kinds of stories. It's always it's always awesome to hear that.
Nicholas, I don't want to change the subject on you, but what is Mercury Wallet like? I'm super interested to hear about your project that you're working on.
Yeah, so it's a combination of things, but essentially a guy called Ruben Samson, he wrote a white paper, well, a Medium post about a concept called state chains. And essentially it's a way of moving private keys, which at the time it came out, you know, CommonSpock had been around for 3 years. We'd been building side chains, but we'd used the same code base as Liquid, which is called Elements, and we built permission side chains. But in reality, we hadn't had much traction. That wasn't going too well. But so we were looking for other things to do in Bitcoin, and, you know, that struck a few chords. You know, I think one of the things I liked about state chains is at the time it solved some of the scalability issues, because you could move private keys off chain, so you're not touching the Bitcoin blockchain. And, you know, a lot of Bitcoiners always say, is it not your keys, not your coins? I like the fact that this kind of changes that a bit, because now you're moving your private keys around. And some of his writings at the time, you know, it wouldn't have been possible to build state chains at the time, because it relied on some changes to Bitcoin, predominantly L2. But my co-founder, you know, he worked with our team to basically come up with a way using these kind of time locks to kind of get out of that. And also at the same time, I think Chris Belcher started looking at the coin swap idea, and he'd written some stuff on the Bitcoin mailing list. And, you know, we didn't just want to build state chains, because, you know, we are a business, we need to make money. So we thought, why not combine, you know, kind of coin swaps with state chains to provide kind of a new privacy technique for Bitcoin? We've been doing bits on privacy anyway. You know, when you're working on side chains, we've been using the Elements code base, which had confidential transactions. So we've been toying about privacy anyway. And because we work with a lot of institutions, you know, believe it or not, privacy is not just for dark markets. Institutions want privacy. We want Bitcoin to be as private as the existing financial system. So we felt by, you know, kind of combining state chains and coin swaps, we'd basically provide a new privacy tool for Bitcoin, which had some, you know, scaling benefits, because you could move Bitcoin off chain. And, you know, the privacy element also becomes quite cheap, because you're doing swaps off chain. Because at the moment, most, you know, privacy techniques are quite expensive in terms of, you know, there's a lot of on-chain transactions that go on. And now in our world becomes state coin. We use CoinSwap to, you know, to basically pass them around to swap them, so that you can basically lose your history or, you know, transfer your history and create a kind of like a privacy layer. So, and, you know, Mercury, which, you know, we're still in beta, but, you know, we released our beta for that, I think it's about 6 weeks now. We have some users. That's essentially what it does. It allows Bitcoin to be kind of moved into these state coins, and then in there's a coin swap tool that allows people to basically meet and swap their coins. And, you know, the whole protocol is private. It's, you know, the coin swap protocol itself uses kind of like is blinded. Yeah, so I think, so what we do is the wallet allows us to take in Bitcoin and convert them into stake coins, which stake coins are essentially just the Bitcoin UTXO. And by using the coin swap protocol, we're able to swap them blindly with other participants. So essentially, as a user, you can come in, you create a stake coin by depositing some Bitcoin, and essentially you go to this, you use the swap feature to basically exchange or swap your Bitcoin or stake coins with other users. Now, some of the limitations here is these are UTXO based, so they're fixed denominations. So you can only, you know, a stake coin will say have one Bitcoin or 0.1 Bitcoin, it stays that. You can't break it. It's not divisible like Lightning is. It's not suited for small payments. It's essentially taking Bitcoin addresses or UTXOs and facilitating moving them off chain.
So I guess the thought that comes to mind understanding that is, I guess, as you say, it's not like as useful for quick small commerce, like buying a coffee or something, as Lightning would be. But then obviously Lightning has the drawback of, you know, needing lots of liquidity tied up and things like that. What's the demand and the fees when it comes to utilizing state chains and coin swaps?
Yeah, so because these are UTXOs and because they're blinded, we can't charge for swaps anyway. So there is a fee when you leave the system. So if you come in, you deposit your coins, you can swap as much as you want for as long as you can. And well, when I say as long as you can, we do have these things time locked. At the moment, we've set that to 3 months. So, you know, but in that period, you can swap as much as you can. And then when you come out, we take a fee of 0.5%. So, but that's unlimited swaps, and, you know, and you're free, and that coin can be transferred, you know, every time it's transferred, I think there's a decrement in time lock. So, and the reason we've done that is there is a risk that a previous owner could basically steal your funds. However, what we did, we used this time lock sequence that can only happen after that 3 month period. So say for example, so, you know, one of the things is, are we custodial or not? We're not custodial in that, you know, if we get shut down, there's no funds that can be seized. We have no access to the funds, but there is that risk that a previous owner could basically broadcast an existing transaction and take the funds. And that issue exists in Lightning. I mean, a previous owner of Lightning could do that as well. Now, Lightning, I think, solves that by having punishment transactions and watchtowers. The way we solved it is we basically set the backup transactions to have a kind of a 3 month limit. So in that 3 months, you should feel it's impossible for a previous owner to steal the funds. So long as you behave, stay in the stablecoin system for that 3 months, that risk doesn't exist. So say, for example, Mercury was to vanish. Let's just say that the server blows up or we get shut down. You always have a backup transaction to broadcast to the Bitcoin network to take your funds. But that backup transaction would only be accepted by the Bitcoin network once that 3 month limit has eclipsed.
Okay, gotcha. So I suppose when I'm thinking of things to compare it to, I suppose obviously I'm right in understanding it's a layer two rather than a side chain, right? So that would be more like Lightning in a way than Liquid. But then I feel like the competing sort of the use case almost is more of like competing with Liquid, I would say, but like maybe a more private version. I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm just kind of making sort of assumptions. But from what you're saying, yeah, if I understand, that feels like what it is. It's like
it's somewhere in between, because obviously, I mean, it doesn't have the liquidity inefficiency of Liquid. I mean, there doesn't need to be any capital locked up, but also, you know, you're stuck with fixed denominations. So obviously, Lightning is good for micropayments, but it's kind of very inefficient from a liquidity point of view. I mean, I wouldn't say we compete with a sidechain, because a sidechain, I mean, when it comes to custodiality, you know, sidechain is kind of custodian. I mean, you are relying on the kind of like the federation. The federation could, in theory, seize your funds. Also, all transactions are recorded on the sidechain. Even if you're using confidential transactions, you do have a ledger here. With a state chain, you know, you're not, yeah, transactions are essentially blind. I mean, they happen off chain. We do record them, but, you know, these are all public. But, you know, there's no, also from a custodial point of view, we don't have custody. So, but, you know, there is an attack vector that I mentioned of the previous owners being able to steal the funds. So, Yeah, it's kind of hard to compare. I mean, there's a lot of noise on Twitter about kind of having Lightning work on top of state chains, which, you know, we are looking at doing, but, you know, I can imagine that's quite, there's a lot of complexity because essentially we're moving private keys. So to think of it, those private keys could be Lightning channels. Now, obviously there's a lot of challenge there if with Lightning, but a lot of people would like to see state chains merged into Lightning for that reason. So you could basically go from your kind of like coins, your Bitcoin to Lightning kind of seamlessly via a state chain. But yeah, we're quite far away from building something like that.
Nicholas, to me, it kind of sounds like Mercury functions in a similar way to the coordinator in Wasabi Wallet when you do the coin joins.
Yeah, when we do the coin swaps.
You're grouped with a bunch of other people and obviously like it's a state chain thing, so yeah. It's different than Wasabi, but like are you like when you use Mercury, do you mix with like hundreds of other people or like 50 other people or how does that work?
So we have, if you open the wallet, the first thing you do is you deposit your coins and you create your stake coins, and we do have a swap function which works very much like a Wasabi coordinator. I mean, the best way I think of state chains or state coins is virtual open dimes. That's essentially what they are. Someone coined that the other day, but you know, remember the open dimes, you know, those kind of USB sticks where you can put Bitcoin in? That's what these things are, they're virtual ones. That's probably the best analogy I can think of to describe it. So our coin swap is essentially putting all these open dimes in a jar, shaking it and pulling a different one out.
That's an excellent analogy. Thanks, that like, really helps me understand it.
Yeah, I think that does. Yeah. I struggle to explain it because, you know, I work in the weeds of it all the time, so it feels normal to me. But when I explain it to people who, you know, are thinking Lightning, we're basically virtual open dimes. Yeah, you know, open dimes have got fixed amounts. Obviously, you can't change them. They are private keys, essentially. And yeah, they live in this kind of virtual world now, which is, you know, what we call the Mercury wallet.
With like other privacy wallets, like Wasabi, for example, people also want to see it like go from a coin join into Lightning channels and stuff like that. So it would be super interesting if Mercury could also do that.
That's on our roadmap. So I think there's various ways we could integrate Lightning. What the complex way and probably the most interesting way is that these state coins represent a Lightning channel. But I think that there's we've spoken to some of the Lightning devs. That's probably a lot of engineering and we're not sure of the use case and there's a lot of complexity there. But I think in the short term, what we would like to do is when people do withdraw, they could potentially withdraw to a Lightning channel. That would be our first kind of integration with Lightning. And I think after that, potentially we would take the fee as a Lightning payment. So at the moment, people deposit their coins and, you know, they can swap, they can send them to other people. And then once they withdraw back to Bitcoin, a fee is taken. I think a nice feature would be to just take a Lightning payment up front to basically create the state coin and then you deposit your Bitcoin into it. And in theory, that would leave less on-chain Tate. Potentially, you know, we could do things where if people pay a bit more, they get more state coins and probably reduce the fees as well. And I think that would give us a nice opportunity to kind of integrate Lightning slowly into the wallet as opposed to the big bang approach of having state coins represent Lightning channels and Bitcoin, which you can imagine there's quite a lot of complexity there.
I'm going to make an assumption when I ask you this question. First, actually, if you could answer just to tell me, is Mercury Wallet a Commerce Block product or is it a separate thing that you're doing? I just wanted to be sure of that because I didn't check that.
It's built, the code's built by Commerce Block. It's run as a separate entity because obviously it has its own way of operating, but it's, the whole team is at Commerce Block. Yeah. And it's all we're working on. Yeah. So.
Right. Gotcha. Okay. Understood. Thanks. No, I just wanted to be sure of that because obviously, you know, I didn't want to make the assumption blindly. So I guess like the something I wanted to ask because I guess what you're doing is interesting work. It's obviously passionate based work and it's obviously privacy based to a degree as well with the coin swaps. And so I know on Stefan's podcast, like you were talking about at the beginning again, like how you discovered Bitcoin 2013, 2014, ended up creating Commerce Block 2016-ish. I guess what I wanted to understand, because I know you guys did the side chain thing first and now you're working what you're working on, which is Mercury Wallet and state chains. I wanted to understand what the primary goal, I guess, is for Commerce Block. Like you obviously get to this point where you decided to create the company why, I guess, like what, and what is, how has that changed, and what is your overall goal, I guess? Like, I want to understand the overall goal of the company and of the team and of yourself and the people working with you, like why you're doing this, because I guess it's always good to understand people's why, so that you can kind of better understand what they're creating.
Yeah, I guess originally we were looking at sidechains, and you know, we wanted to build Bitcoin infrastructure based on sidechains, and you know, there's a lot of reasons why that hasn't worked out. A lot of it has to do, you know, in 2019, we would speak to people about building on a sidechain. You know, people like EOS, if you remember them, Tezos, would, with their bags of cash, would make it more lucrative to work with others. I also think Bitcoin has changed. It's, you know, it's become a lot more ossified. It's, you know, it's kind of like a hard environment to build, you know, kind of smart contracts on. And yeah, you know, we just evolved. And, you know, the team, you know, my colleagues are mainly Bitcoin guys. They know the infrastructure quite well. They know the Bitcoin scripting language quite well. And I think privacy was where I thought it was interesting. And we were doing privacy stuff on side chains anyway. And you know, when I saw the state chain idea, it just felt very logical. There was a gap in the market. Yeah, you know, privacy is quite hard on Bitcoin. Let's be clear. You know, Wasabi's not for everyone. Samurai's not for everyone. Join market is certainly not for everyone. I mean, join market is really interesting, but it's I wouldn't be able to show it to my mother, put it that way. So we thought, you know, if you look at the Mercury wallet, we hope we've created a wallet that's slightly easier to use than some of the other things. I'm not, there's a lot of myths about privacy. Probably people sometimes think privacy is a dark thing, but I just want Bitcoin to be as private as PayPal. It's impossible for me to see your PayPal account. It should be the same. And I think a lot of people these days that I know don't even use Bitcoin, because they don't really want to show their whole history when they go buy something with it. It's not ideal in that sense. And I think, and you know, funny, when I speak to institutions, which I do, because you know, I was a software engineer for banks. I worked on the trading floor. They're concerned about the privacy of Bitcoin. You know, they don't like the idea that Bitcoin sometimes is an open book. You know, you can see big trade flows or going in from exchanges to certain addresses. There are websites out there that can detect, you know, this address belongs to this guy or that belongs to that hedge fund or whatever. So I do think privacy is needed.
Have you received any criticism from like the Bitcoin maximalists and stuff like that on Twitter? Because you guys are basically creating like a colored coin or something with Bitcoin, like the state coins.
No, not at all. I mean, you know, you always expect some banter on Twitter, but no, not at all. I mean, we haven't really created a colored coin. I mean, all we're doing is moving private keys around. So we've taken Bitcoin as it is, which has been a challenge. You know, there's, you know, I think everyone agrees that it's hard to build on Bitcoin. That's what it is. The code base is hard. So, you know, I think where we've received criticism, and you that's to be expected, is how non-custodial we are. And, you know, I think we haven't tried to say we are, we're not. I mean, I believe we're not, but we've tried to be as upfront about how we're non-custodial. So in our back end, the way it works is every time a state coin is created, we on the back end have to create a private key. So we actually open sourced it. So it's called Lockbox. We basically built our own HSM based on Intel SGX. And that basically creates a private key per state coin. And when people remove their state coin or take it out or take it out of circulation, we use our HSM to prove that we've deleted it. And you know, this is licensed by Intel, and we're quite upfront about how it works. And you know, so if people feel there's a risk in using us, they can see what we've done. So I think someone came up with the term, it might have been Ruben Sansal, but we're provable non-custodian or something like that. We're not, there is a risk that a previous owner could steal the funds, but then if that happened, you would know it was us that was behaving maliciously, and you know, we'd have to do it up front. So if we decided to steal all the money right now, we couldn't. It's impossible. We don't have those private keys, and they get deleted. And if someone was to break our private key, the one we have in the end, that would be quite useless. But if we were to suddenly become malicious and work with a previous owner, because of the way the protocol works, you would know it's us that's behaving malicious. So there's quite, and we'd also have to work with Intel to basically break the mechanism, because we're using Intel SGX. So, you know, I don't think they would be, I think that's probably kind of unlikely. But, you know, there's always trade-offs and pluses. So, you know, we're quite open about the trade-offs we have. And yeah, we're hoping people will build on what we've done, you know, because, you know, yeah, it's unlikely that Bitcoin's going to change in the next few years. So if we're to advance the protocol, we have to accept some of its limitations and build around it.
So we've spoken with Wasabi Wallet guys and Gibson from Conjoin, and we've spoken with Liquid as well. I guess on the CoinJoin side of things, I think from my understanding, from speaking with a couple of the guys at Wasabi, and that their like primary view or vision for the future would be everyone by default utilizing CoinJoin, and it actually becoming cheaper than not utilizing CoinJoin when it comes to transactions. So it becomes cheaper and it becomes more private. That's their kind of future dream or goal. I guess, would you say that for yourselves, your future dream or goal would be like wallets by default utilizing state chains and utilizing the coin swap feature, and like people by default, you know, having it as an option within most of the top wallets and have it becoming the norm? Is that kind of what you would, is that kind of the goal that you think you want to go for? Like you think other companies
privacy via coin swaps and coin joins are very different. So yeah, when you do a coin join, you essentially, on the Bitcoin blockchain, you have this one Uber transaction, and basically your history is kind of merged into that one transaction. Now the challenge there is, you know, exchanges can just say, well, you've participated in a coin join, your money is useless. So you do have this issue that with coin joins, you could create these, you know, two tiers of Bitcoin. You've got, you know, nice, clean, KYC'd, OFAC compliant Bitcoin and, you know, coin join. And we don't do coin joins, we do coin swaps. Now, coin swaps don't create an Uber massive transaction. They essentially swap the history. So if all, you know, if me and you and say a North Korean person was to swap history, one of us may end up with that dirty coin. So the benefit is that it's, you know, it's harder for exchanges, etc., to pick up a coin swap, but someone could end up with that dirty coin. Now, what we do is we basically take a hash, you know, we basically attest every coin swap we've done into the Bitcoin blockchain using something called Mainstay, which is a protocol we wrote, which is very similar to Open Timestamp. So if the coin swap was to happen and you ended up with the dirty coin, you could say, well, I'm not a North Korean dude. I did a coin swap on this day and I can prove it on the Bitcoin blockchain. And honestly, because coin swaps is quite new, we don't know how challenges are going to react to it. Are they? And there is always that risk you end up with a dirty coin, but I would say the risk is minimal, and you can always then do a coin join afterwards or put it through a lightning channel. But so I think there's some, you know, to say that coin join or coin swap is one is better, they're different. There's different risks in both. But do I see all coins being coin joined or coin swapped? I don't know. It's quite hard to tell right now. And, you know, you're always playing this kind of cat and mouse games with, you know, the exchanges, the Chainalysis of the world. And Lightning's only going to make that even more messy, which is a good thing, to be honest, because you want to make their jobs happy. And funny, I have spoken to the Chainalysis guys. I mean, they want us to be doing this privacy stuff, you know, in a way it kind of keeps them busy anyway. So it's kind of like a game you're playing, which is, I think, it's one of the fun stuff around Bitcoin, you know, kind of playing this game of like cat and mouse. It's fun.
I think Nicole's already answered my question I was going to ask anyway, which is, how resilient is Mercury, you know, against coin tracking firms like Chainalysis and the rest and the likes? So is it, users of Mercury wallet, you know, do they have the full confidence of, you know, Mercury that they are, you know, fully covered, or like you explained, there are some risks? Or can you, you know, is there any more that you can explain?
Well, I think if I'm 100% honest, we're not big enough for Chainalysis to even pay attention to us. But I think once they start looking at us, then it, you know, that will be a challenge. And it's going to be work in progress. So at the moment, there's no on-chain taint. It's impossible to see that a coin swap happened. But we do take a fee. So Chainalysis could look for that fee we take. And that's why we're looking at a Lightning payment to basically take that up front, so there wouldn't be a fee. So if people were to come to our wallet and basically buy these stake coins, which essentially be like buying an empty open dime, that would happen off chain. It could happen with a Lightning payment. And then once they put their Bitcoin in there and do swaps and then come out, I think that's going to be very hard for Chainalysis firm to detect. I mean, the only thing they would be able to see is that we have fixed denominations, but our exchanges and chain analysis firms going to penalize everyone who has a 0.001 fixed denomination? I mean, and also we can always start changing up the denominations. We can have 0.123 or something, which I think some of the CoinJoin people are already looking at doing. So I think once we take Lightning payments up front, we essentially would have no on-chain tape. That's my feeling at the moment. And I hope we become big enough where we are a problem for chain analysis, and then we can readjust and play the game. Yeah, so.
Yeah, I think like that's, you know, one of the biggest challenges of people actually adopting. I think there are two reasons why people refuse to, you know, be more, yeah, you know, privacy oriented, which is one, they do not care, they don't give a shit about privacy. They're free to, you know, hand over all their details to whoever, you know, whatever big corporation asks of it. And second is that it's the complexity of using, you know, privacy enhancing tools. Like at the moment, I don't think there is any mobile friendly service wallet for, you know, plebs like me who want to, you know.
We spend a lot of time. I mean, we didn't design the UI, because if my team designed the UI, it looked like Electrum, which, as you know, is not easy to use. But so we did get like an external UI designer. But I think the UI is good. But one of the issues we've found, and something we need to improve on, is a lot of times people think our server's down, and we find out it's not down. It's just Tor is being Tor. Tor could be DDoS. Tor is running slow. So we're going to make some enhancements to actually show to the user, look, you know, the wallet's not down, the funds are safe, it's just Tor's running slow. And yeah, I think making things like that more verbose would help. I do think Samurai runs on a mobile phone, but I'm not sure on that. I think it's Android based. Although yeah. I think, yeah. But yeah.
Yeah, but it's pretty complex. I've tried using it a couple of times, and it's, you know, does my head in. I'm like, I just give up, you know, halfway. And I guess this is, I'm one of those people that, you know, I'm not totally, you know, newbie when it comes to using stuff like this, but it's that hard when someone like me who wants to go private, but finds it difficult to use tools like Samurai, even as friendly, you know, user-friendly as they claim it is, but this is the current state it is in right now. So
I'd be interested in your feedback on Mercury, because we did try and make a big, nice React-based wallet. We've got a demo video on our Twitter handle, which I'd be curious, because we did try hard to make it user-friendly, because the first time I used Wasabi, I struggled. And I'm a... And, you know, and it was nothing against Wasabi. It's just a very complicated thing to do. And then, you know, the wallets jam. And I probably was critical of Wasabi, but having built a privacy wallet, now I totally get why privacy wallets jam. It's probably 99% of the time it's Tor jamming, yeah. So I mean, and that's what we've tried to do. I think the problem with us is this concept of moving private keys. A lot of people, it's like quite weird. And you know, but so far I think people have found it quite easy to use. But again, you know, we're in beta, we're still ironing out little bugs. I think the Tor issue for us is the biggest challenge. It's like if the wallet freezes up, you know, you haven't lost your coins. It's not that the server's down, it's because Tor. And we're looking at doing alternatives to Tor, like using like more reliable protocols like I2P, et cetera, and maybe giving people the option to switch. But I think, yeah, it's one of the our initial users, which was from Ruben Sanson's group. He basically created the state chain torch. And, you know, if you go on Twitter, you see people being passing around a bit like Lightning Torch. And it's been very interesting to see different people use it, you know, people from whose English is not their first language, people that have never used a Bitcoin wallet. And it's been quite good feedback in terms of, and I think people find the wallet easy to use, but maybe we haven't been giving enough tooltips, enough explanations about why this is so. But yeah, that's our job to do, I guess. But yeah, it seems to be, it's definitely much easier to use. In the last 6 weeks, I think we've improved it a lot. I think people are finding it easier to swap. And yeah, people like the fact that you're not penalized if you screw up a swap. You know, they are free. We have this feature where you can just leave it in auto swap throughout the day. So we've tried to make that as simple as possible. So I agree with you. I mean, privacy does need to be improved. And I think maybe other protocols do that slightly better than us. So And I did look at, I'm quite open-minded. I did look at the way, say, for example, Tornado Swap works on Ethereum. And, whether you like Ethereum or not, that's another question. But, it does make privacy quite easy. And we've, looked at a few of those concepts and put that into Mercury Wallet.
Something that's that I always think is an interesting question to ask, and we get a lot of different answers, because Bitcoin privacy is a very difficult thing to work on. It's a very complex and difficult thing to get right, and because it's not baked in at the base layer, right? We're often talking to super intelligent people who are trying their best to create user-friendly solutions to make it easy, which is very hard, as you definitely will have experienced and are experiencing. So the question comes is, why decide to work on Bitcoin privacy when there are different cryptocurrencies out there that are, have privacy sort of baked in at the base layer, like Monero, for example? What is it that for you wasn't right or meant that you didn't want to put your time into, or what did you see as an issue with things like Monero and Zcash and other things that have sort of privacy baked in? Why is it that you decided to go for creating sort of privacy solutions for Bitcoin instead?
Well, I think there's always trade-offs. So, Bitcoin, it doesn't have privacy at the base layer, but the benefit is auditability. I like Monero. I studied it quite a lot, but we don't know if there's an inflation bug there. And, I think the people who designed Bitcoin originally, that they made the right trade-offs in putting privacy as a second layer. But, I think if Bitcoin is to be more usable, and, privacy is not just, I speak to a lot of institutions who want privacy in Bitcoin as well. This is, when Liquid came out, a lot of institutions were looking at it as a settlement layer using confidential transactions. So I think it's one of the holes in Bitcoin that needs to be answered. And a lot of people will be satisfied with just using Lightning. I mean, Lightning is fairly private. I think the issue with Lightning, is we just don't, if there's only one or two Lightning hubs in the world, maybe it's not going to be that private. But at the moment, if you have quite a big decentralized network, it probably will be. And I also thought, the state chains idea kind of gives you a bit of scalability. I mean, I think moving chains off, there's a lot of use cases that I think are going to come out of state chains that we haven't thought about. But having this virtual open dime, I found it quite fascinating. And to be frank, if you're like Bitcoin, what are the interesting things to build? I mean, Lightning's going in a good direction. I mean, we built sidechains. That's without knocking other people that are still working on that. That hasn't really taken the world by storm. And, if you look at the privacy stuff, it's interesting. It's moving. People are using Wasabi, Samurai, and Join Market. If you go to bitcoinkpis.com, there's significant volume. It shows that there is a demand for that. And I think now there's a demand to make that easier to use.
Gotcha. I guess so. Yeah. I mean, to conclude, I suppose the answer, the big points are, the demands in Bitcoin and therefore you're going to want to build solutions for Bitcoin. And also that, the lack of privacy baked into layer one is a feature, not a bug, right? I guess it's not a bug, it's a feature, is like kind of joke answer, but that is kind of true. So it's easier, or it's probably more suitable to build layers upon Bitcoin, just like there's layers built on the internet, for example, and rather than have everything baked in at the base layer. I think that's a pretty good answer, because I remember we spoke to Giacomo Zucco about it, and he was somewhat critical of having privacy baked in the base layer, went into quite a good answer about it as well, and why he saw that as an issue.
The thing that people worship most about Bitcoin is it's 21 million. And I think anything that would potentially damage that is probably not going to fly anyway. And, I'm a fan of Monero, but, Monero, there has been inflation bugs. We don't know if there's one right now. Also, wherever there's a plus, there's a minus. Monero is working well because it has very little volumes. But, potentially having these, very large signatures, which is the way they achieve privacy with the ring signatures, that's potentially a bigger scaling issue than Bitcoin. Yeah. So,
Nicholas, I wanted to ask you, why do you think that sidechains haven't really taken off?
It's a combination of things, I think. Whether you like the other blockchains or not, it's very hard to build on Bitcoin. you know, other blockchains, you can get a bunch of inexperienced people to knock up some JavaScript, a website, and before you know it, you've got a DeFi protocol worth a few million dollars. Bitcoin's hard to build on. I mean, it hasn't been easy. When we worked on sidechains, the issue was always exchanges. Exchanges didn't really want to support a Bitcoin sidechain. They liked running an Ethereum node or whatever node, and they are the gatekeepers of the ecosystem in a way. And that was my experience. I mean, if there was a nice kind of JavaScript type language in a sidechain, could that change things? Maybe, but there were attempts before Ethereum to do this on Bitcoin. If you guys remember Counterparty, but they didn't really have the marketing arm of a lot of these other blockchains. I mean, that's of course, let's say it is what it is. But, you know, because I often tell people, well, you know, we had NFTs on Bitcoin before. Do you remember, if people remember the Rare Pepes, you know, Tev obviously was on Bitcoin before, but for a combination of marketing, user tools, and, you know, lack of demand, really, to be honest.
Do you think this is, because lots of the crypto exchanges have come under scathing criticism about their, you know, they don't, about how they do not, you know, really support the Bitcoin ecosystem. They do not, you know, aside from probably OKX and Bitfinex, no other exchange, none of the other exchanges actually support Lightning Network right now. And you think it's motivated by the fact that, you mentioned demand, but do you think it's, you know, driven by greedier business? Quite all right, but, you know, Bitcoin is what is what actually, you know, gave birth to this crypto industry, and there's kind of lack of support. Do you think there's a lack of incentive to actually support liquid sidechains like Liquid and the rest of them? Basically, just support the Bitcoin ecosystem to grow. Like you said, they are the gatekeepers. Why is there lack of interest to actually support the Bitcoin ecosystem to grow? They can do it.
Incentives. I mean, yeah, running a node at home is one. Running production is complicated. You know, you need to have failover, disaster recovery. I think there's a lot of challenges there. Also, I mean, sidechains is an interesting one in that, you know, Bitcoin's, I think we're all on the same page. When it comes to the concept of sound money, it's won that argument. And no one is saying that Bitcoin is not sound money. So maybe Ethereum or Solana, or I don't know what the latest one is, Terra, you know, you could argue and say that they're more or less sidechains to Bitcoin. I mean, if wrapped Bitcoin in Ethereum, isn't that 16 billion or something the last time I saw? Essentially, they've become Bitcoin sidechains anyway. So, you know, a lot of these DeFi protocols, I think one of them got hacked the other day. Was it BadgerDAO? That was a Bitcoin DeFi protocol using wrapped Bitcoin on Ethereum. So at a very high level, that is a form of, you know, a form of a sidechain. You may not like the implementation. You may think wrapped Bitcoin is somewhat centralized. Maybe it is, but they are a lot of these blockchains which are easier to integrate into exchanges. And I dare say exchanges are more incentivized because these blockchains can give them, you know, a bunch of tokens, but they are essentially operating like Bitcoin sidechains. Bad ones, but, you know, as long as they don't try and be sound money, I don't really have an issue with that. Yeah.
I'll say the problem is generally money, isn't it? I mean,
yeah.
EOS has, they raise so much money, and if you get ETH or have some ETH thing, and then you have a token, and then you airdrop it, and blah blah blah, then people get it free, and then people are incentivized to spread it on Twitter and tell their friends they get it, and then they can sell it, and so that's what it's money seems to be the issue when it comes to Bitcoin related things.
Nicholas, what's your take on some of these platforms like Stacks or RSK, where they're trying to basically mimic what's happening on Ethereum with Bitcoin?
I don't know much about Stacks, although I did go to a presentation. I mean, I didn't used to know a lot about Rootstock. I don't think there's much demand. I sometimes think Rootstock is like the bastard, RSK is the bastard no one wants. Bitcoiners don't like it because it's doing Ethereum type stuff. Ethereum guys don't like it because it's working on the Bitcoin blockchain. Well, yeah, that's what that feels like. I've not really looked into Stacks, to be honest. You know, I think I don't have a problem with, yeah, if Bitcoin is sound money and it's being used as a wrapped Bitcoin in Ethereum or Solana, whether that's on Ethereum and Solana versus Stacks or RSK, to me, it doesn't really bother me. I don't think it's a big issue.
Are you a maximalist?
No, I'm a technologist. No, but that's one of the things that's interesting about Bitcoin. You know, you have people like Michael Saylor saying, I don't know, it's property. You've got people like Jack Dorsey who says it's money. you know, both Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton both hate it. You know, it's whatever you want to make it. I mean, I didn't like Ethereum when I first got into it, when it first came out, because I thought it would never scale. It clearly hasn't. That's why they're doing Ethereum version 2. But I'm open-minded. I think there's some brilliant work going on Monero, for example. I think that's interesting.
Yeah, I'm asking because, as you probably might be aware, you know, Bitcoin maximalism has come under, you know, intense, you know, scrutiny and criticism recently because they think that it's turning people away. I saw it, a thread by, I just, you know, remember this as Ricardo mentioned Stacks, a tweet from a thread from Stacks founder, Muneeb, I think that's his name. And he was, you know, he was like, Bitcoin maximalism has outlived its usefulness, and it's probably turning people away from Bitcoin and pushing them to other chains like Ethereum, where they go and do all this and fancy NFT and DeFi things. So, do you agree with that sentiment? Like you mentioned, you're techno maximalist or technologist, you know, in that sense. So, do you agree with that kind of sentiment that, you know, maximalism is, it's currently useless as it is. It's doing more harm than good.
I think it's a bit irrelevant. I mean, Twitter's entertainment, let's be honest. People put things to get engagement. And a lot of the guys on Twitter are running podcasts. It's part of their business. You know? And, you know, if you say something controversial, you're going to get more engagement. Yeah, I think one of the issues in crypto is there's a lot of noise in terms of how many people are building. I was surprised when, like, for example, Ruben Samson wrote the state chains paper, why no one looked at building it. And people always ask me, who else is building state chains? And no one. And, you know, I think the stack stuff, I mean, I looked at it briefly, but I think sometimes he hasn't been able to get mindshare, like the Ethereum guys, like the Solana guys, like, I don't know, Polkadot guys. I mean, that's just, it is what it is. But I think maximalism, it's interesting because I think, yeah, I was around in the block size war and it clearly was needed because, you know, a bunch of VCs got in a room and wanted to change the consensus rules of Bitcoin, and that was ridiculous. You know, it really was. And a lot of that maximum came in from there. But, you know, ultimately, it's just noise on Twitter. Some of the maximalists have reached out to me when, you know, we released Mercury, very supportive. I mean, you know, Stephen Levera, he invited me to be on his show. He's clearly a Bitcoin maximalist. Subject never really came up. He was just asking me about, you know, the technology. And I think, yeah, I'm quite open that I look at other blockchains. As I said, I think, you know, it's technology. But, you know, I think we have to sometimes separate the entertainment of Twitter from what's being happened. And, yeah, I think in another world, if Counterparty had been more successful, if they'd have got, you know, things like Counterparty and what was Tether built on? OmniLayer. If they'd have had better marketing, if they'd have had VC support that maybe Ethereum and Tezos had, maybe a lot of these blockchains wouldn't have existed. I mean, I'm open to that, but that hasn't happened. That time has passed. It's time to move on.
Since you said that you're very open-minded, what you're currently building with Mercury, can it be done on Ethereum, or it's something that is maybe due to this build of Bitcoin is basically domiciled to Bitcoin as it is?
Yeah, I mean, we could build it, but I doubt it we would. I mean, it's hard to think of doing something on Ethereum, for example, without a token. Also, I don't think there's a demand for it. One of the reasons why Mercury is quite useful for Bitcoin is because it does have you know, the scripting language of Bitcoin is very rigid. But, you know, wherever there's a negative, there's a positive. Bitcoin's very much ossified, and that's why people trust it as sound money. You know, I don't know what Ethereum is right now. I mean, if you read Vitalik's latest blog post, he doesn't know what Ethereum is right now. So the negatives around Bitcoin not changing, being ossified is, you know, when people ask me what coin to invest in, I say, look, Bitcoin's going to be around for the next 10 years. Ethereum, I can't answer that question. Maybe the latest kid on the block when it comes to a smart contracting layer, Solana, but I'm pretty sure there's going to be a better version of that in 5 years' time. Whereas if you're looking at an ossified layer, like, you know, as a hard currency, Bitcoin's clearly won that war, and that's what it is. Yeah. You may make more money buying other coins or have more fun building on other blockchains, but they're much more fluid. You can't stake something long term on that.
So. It's not like a maximalist right now.
I don't know. I mean, Yeah, with the age of Twitter, everyone's to label someone. You know, you're a Maxilist, you're an appeaser. I really don't know. I mean, I'm open-minded. I play with other stuff. I like playing with technology. I'd be honest. It's like martial arts. I mean, I'm at the age of 40. I decided to learn BJJ and relearn everything. Yeah, so I'm probably not the best person. Maybe I changed my mind too much. So,
well, it's good to be open-minded, right? And to consider alternatives at all times. That's kind of like the way I like to see things. Like, as you said, if people who don't know about crypto ask me about, I'll just say, look, just buy Bitcoin. If it's going to be the thing that, you know, sticks around, it's the most simple, I guess, in a way, and it works. Yeah. It's correct. Everything functions. It's, you know, it's the way to go. And then, but obviously, I'm like, if you're a gambler, go ahead and like have a look at some other things if you want to. That's the way I see it. And I guess I like to look at what's going on elsewhere, because you can obviously take ideas from there and you can keep up to date with things and see what I, you know, what's floating around, what people are interested in, because you never know where you might get inspiration. But you never know, you know, what's going to happen in the world.
It would make my life easier if everything was bought on Bitcoin, but I just think that ship maybe sailed. And I think NFTs are fun. I mean, I have a daughter who loves that stuff, but.
I did have one. I sold it though. This is like ages ago, I don't know, maybe December or January of this year or December last year. I got that, well, the NBA Top Shot packs. So I was like, oh, it's only like $6 or something. And I made a massive profit as well. So, you know.
Yeah, I mean, before Ethereum came out, I spent more of my time playing with things like Counterparty and Mastercoin and things like that. I thought they were quite interesting, and colored coins. But I've just accepted that knowledge is useless. It didn't happen. Yeah.
Like, it could be that in the future that knowledge will somehow be relevant, right? Like, you'll have a step up on other people. Who knows?
I just recently spoke to John Carvalho, and he was talking about how he's going to be using Omni for his new company synonym for like tokenization and stuff. So,
I mean, I did like Counterparty, but you know, I remember at the time either Counterparty or OmniLayer was kind of criticized by they weren't called the Bitcoin Maxis then, but you know, I'd say the Bitcoin hardcore people, because they were burning Bitcoin to create those tokens. So you're always going to get controversy. But
yeah, I remember reading about that. I think it was Omni, but I'm not going to say that definitively.
Yeah, to get them, I remember you had to send Bitcoin to a certain burn address. And back then, some people said it's evil to burn Bitcoin. Yeah. So you're wasting a precious resource. I remember all that controversy. So
I'm not very purist. Yeah, it's,
you end up being like, there's no truer Scotsman, you know, who's the most purist? You know, it gets a bit high schoolish.
I'll be interested to see what further, because obviously, I can never remember who said this, but I really like the phrase. I think it was some Ethereum DeFi guy or something, but he said in one of his articles, it was like bear market, bull development, bull market, bear development. So it's obviously, kind of makes sense, right?
I've always said, look, Ethereum, I've never been a fan of the protocol, but some of the people building stuff on Ethereum, yeah, there's some good stuff. Like, I think the ZK rollup stuff is interesting. Although, you know, I don't know if people remember, ZK rollups was invented by a Bitcoiner. It's called, someone proposed it around 2012. I think it was Greg Maxwell. It was called Coin Witness. So if you do a search for Coin Witness on Bitcoin talk, you'll see that's basically what a ZK rollup is, or was it, one of the ZK things. So yeah, there's some interesting stuff, but I think you just have to stay open-minded, not get into religious wars.
And you have to wade through the crap to find the odd diamond in the rough kind of thing, I think is the way I see it. But I guess the crux of it is that it'll be interesting to see if and as we went enter some kind of bear market over the next year or so, or a couple of years, it'll be interesting to see how things change and whether, you know, how Synonym goes, which is John Carvalho's project, how your entire project goes, how, you know, how many people pick up on things and start building things more, because it does feel to me as if in the bull market there's a lot less being built. That's always the feeling I get. I think maybe there's multiple reasons for that, but yeah, so it'll be interesting to see as we enter like a downturn, even as we enter a downturn in the market at some point. I'm kind of excited to see what happens and how things develop and what survives. I think what you're doing and building will probably survive. So,
I think state chains, I mean, we've built the first release, and you know, obviously we saw CoinSwap as a tool on state chains to make it commercially viable. I like to think that maybe there's some use cases that we haven't thought about for state coins. I mean, yeah, maybe someone's going to do some sort of NFT virtual open dime on top of the protocol. And I think that's sometimes like when, you know, people ask me, what about Taproot? Well, how's that going to change? And I said, well, after Taproot's implemented, you're going to see, you know, developers come and think of things that no one's thinking about right now. I think that'd be quite interesting. And that's what you can hope for and create, you know, open it up a bit.
Fingers crossed, right?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we're I think we're approaching literally an hour. So now is probably a good time to wrap up the conversation. I mean, I suppose the question for you is there anything you wanted to, before we do wrap up, is there anything you wanted to say or anything you want to promote? Obviously, people can check out check out your company, and they can check you on Twitter as well. If you want to give any sort of information, I guess, about that, go ahead.
Yeah, I do have one last question.
Oh, sorry.
What next? I'm pretty interested in Mercury right now. I'm gonna go back to, you know, give it a try. So what's next can we expect for, you know, users like me, probably retailers like me who, you know, are trying to, you know, get into, you know, privacy, and what can we expect in the future?
I would love you to basically join the state chain torch and get the coin, play with it, maybe do a few swaps and send it on, and then, you know, tell us if it's easy to use or not. But, you know, in the state chain torch, you know, one of the things about the state chain torch, people don't realize there's no transaction fee for you. This is all happening off chain. So anyone can download the wallet, you know, find the state chain torch on Twitter and have a play. But that's, you know, I hope that we take the beta logo off our website in the next month, and, you know, we start attracting more users. For us personally, we want to look at ways of integrating Lightning. Clearly, there's, you know, strong momentum on Lightning. And, you know, there's been a lot of debate about how Lightning and state chains can work. You know, that's where our focus is. And, you know, we're going to be working more and more to make this wallet easier to use, so that privacy is not this scary thing. It's not this, you know, a lot of people are scared of privacy as well, that, you know, they get it wrong and they lose their coins. And I think that's what we have to do. So, but yeah, I would like people to download the wallet and join the state chain torch and have some fun.
Well, I'll be downloading the wallet straight away after this interview. So I hope to be able to give you some feedback if I don't get sidetracked by something else, but I'll try and do that. Or if I don't forget to tell you the feedback, which is usually what happens in these circumstances. Not very,
yeah, be brutal. It helps. Remember, yeah, my team, they're engineers, so yeah, they use Electrum. So yeah, I'm not knocking Electrum, but, you know, Electrum was a wallet designed for engineers, not for my mother. Yeah.
Yeah, I've had my fair share of Electrum struggles over time. So I understand what you're saying. That's for sure. Yeah. So yeah, I'll definitely check it out and try and remember to give you some tips. And I guess to anyone out listening, please download Mercury Wallet and give it a try. It's all anyone can ask. If you check it out, just type into Google and you'll find the wallet. But yeah, I guess, is there anything else you want to say at all before we head off?
No, thanks. Thanks for having me. Enjoyed it. Enjoyed talking about other things as well. It's a nice, diverse chat. Yeah,
no, absolutely. It was awesome to have you on the pod. And it's great to just, you know, get to understand someone behind, you know, an important implementation, an important idea, and the why and the how. And also, just, I think definitely you've provided me with a much clearer understanding with some of your analogies as well of, like, you know, how the state chains and coin swaps work. So, and also, I guess, understanding the difference between CoinSwap and CoinJoin, like, I feel like I knew some of, like, the differences, but now it feels a lot clearer as to what the drive is and the trade-offs or reasons are for going one or the other. So it's much appreciated. But yeah, thanks, obviously, Jerry, for popping in. Sorry to I didn't introduce you in the beginning, but for anyone listening, it's because he wasn't here at the beginning, but he popped in. And thanks to Ricardo as well, as always, for joining. And yeah, thanks so much, Nicholas. It's been amazing to have you on today, and it's been much appreciated. And hopefully, once you guys are out of beta and you know, things move further along, then we can have you back in the future at some time. Until then, it's been great. And thank you, everyone, for listening. We love you. Have a wonderful day, hour, week, month, year, life. We'll see you all next time, and keep buying Bitcoin.